okay, we'll go ahead and get started tonight. We're doing the second half of a study of Acts. I mean, sorry. See, you kind of showed up the wrong class. A second half of the study of the Psalms. So as Greg said Sunday morning, there's only so much you can do with two classes in the book of Psalms. But the concept is we're overviewing, we're in the second half of the United Kingdom, and we have the wisdom, we're here in the period with the wisdom literature going on. So we talked about this a little bit more a few classes ago. The book can divide. Greg started off, and again, if you missed Greg's slides Sunday morning, you can get them online. They're all uploaded. They're there now. So if you're wanting to refer back to some of the things he said and some of the charts he had, they are available. But we can break the book, a Psalms, down in several ways. We can do it by the physical books, the way the books kind of break down. And there's a chart for that. We can look at the classifications. We can look at it by, whether it be by author, the style or the purpose, the subject matter of the Psalms, or the gender or the type. We've chosen to go through by the gender or the type. So that's kind of the approach that we've taken. But there are several, and there's many ways you can break it apart. And really, it doesn't matter too much, because even if you start talking about subject matter or genre and type, there's so many of the Psalms that the same, well, for example, we're going to talk confidence tonight. Well, there's very few Psalms that you can go through that concept of confidence in who God is isn't there. So there's so much overlap as it is. And then there's the authors of the Psalms. So here's the types that we've been looking through. Now, when we start talking about wisdom literature in the Old Testament, we think about English poetry as a cadence of sound, a rhythmic sound. And again, to remind ourselves, what is Hebrew poetry? It's not rhythm of sound, but rhythm of what? Thought. Very good. You have this rhythm of thought. And just like in the book of Job and also with the Psalms, the point will be made, and it'll be repeated in different words, or it'll be repeated a little more emphatic, and it'll be recorded again a little bit more emphatic. And with Job, we made the comment that if it was rhythmic sound, what would happen through translation from the different languages through time? If it was rhythmic in sound, you know, if you take English poetry and translate it to Japanese, or you translate it to some other language, that rhythm of sound is gone. But the beauty of the Hebrew scriptures and the beauty of the Hebrew wisdom literature, obviously to God's wisdom, is it has withstood the times and is still as beautiful today as it ever was before. And one other hint that I like to give, and I gave it with Job, if anybody has a phone who actually reads, that has where it'll read back to you, someone who has spent the time studying and actually emphasizes and their tone changes, where they're making the point, sometimes gives you a little bit more than what you do when you're just sitting there reading it yourself. They've read it many times, and it does bring some things to light, and it kind of gives you back the feeling in which some of the original was read. So I like to listen to it, and while I'm reading it on the screen in front of me, I like to listen to it as well. But that's powerful with the Psalms. How many teachers do we have in here that will actually be teaching this material in the high school down next time? We have several teachers in here. This approach that Greg started that I'm going to finish tonight, don't try that at home. With a high school class, with adult classes, this works well. But when you're trying to take this, I would actually say especially with high school classes, pick out some of these things that's going to build their faith, right? I'm really thinking about next quarter with a high school class. The entire second class will not be on four sections of these, but we may spend the whole second class on the Messianic alone, right? Trying to build that faith. We'll talk a lot about confidence. We'll talk a lot about some of the Thanksgiving ones and wisdoms as well. But maybe even devote the entire second class to that of the Messianic. Why? Because that's something that may build their faith, and something that, especially at the time and point in time that they are in life. So with that being said, we're going to start with the fourth section, and we're going to try to finish this up tonight. So there's obviously not much that we can do as far as detailed study of these. We're going to try to capture the concept of each of these as we go through. So let's start off with confidence. When I say the word confidence, what comes to your mind? Confidence is what? Yeah, I have a belief in myself, right? I have a trust that I'm going to get this job done. I have a trust that I'm going into this test. I know this material is going to happen. I know this, right? It's a confidence. Now, when we think about in the world, people have a lot of confidence in a lot of things. Name a few. What was that? Yes, we have a lot of confidence in the brake pedal of the car that is going to stop us. That is a very good point. What else? Money. Fame. Family. One more time. A lot of confidence in the government. Yes, there is a lot of people that have a lot of confidence in the government. Well, the amazing thing, when you start thinking about confidence in those kind of things, what happens to confidence in money about 1929 in this country? What happened to confidence in money just a few years ago in this country? Right? You can go downhill really, really quickly with confidence in money. So what do you think this rhythmic cadence of thought is through these Psalms on confidence? Confidence in what? Confidence in God. Very much so. Now, go ahead and be open your Bibles to Psalms 11, and we'll flip through some of these and make some points. In Psalms chapter 11 and verse 2, and you probably know this from knowing David, but what is it that when David is talking about confidence in God or trust in God, what situations comes to mind most often with David? That's right. Here's a man who's running from his life from Saul. Was he not just kind of categorize his life? Was his life not one of war? Right? From a very young age with him and Goliath, all the way through running from his son at the end of his life, you have a man, David, here who is constantly being chased by his enemy. Someone who's there, read 11, verse 2. All right, so here you have what's the picture that's being painted? You've got an archer that has the bow set, the arrows drawn, pulled back, and time again throughout the Psalms, David is the one that's in the cross beam, or the author. Sometimes it's David, sometimes it's one of the other authors. But he's in the cross beam, his enemies are coming after him, his enemies are coming down. And amazingly enough, again, the concept of the Psalms is, in those times of what would be the most despair to most people, my army is surrounded, I'm up against a giant, our mind tends to go to the physical, right? I'll never accomplish this. But it is in those times that we have these comments of confidence. He starts 11 in verse 1 with, I trust in the Lord. My trust is in the Lord. So here we have that he's set up in this sense of he's being attacked or he is in the crossbeam, in the crosshairs of the bow of the archer. And here he is, my trust is in the Lord. I may be in the crossbows, but my trust is in God during this time. So with that, we have this kind of language. And this one in 11, verse 1, I put my trust in God. And we say that and we read that, but if you put yourself and take yourself back, we don't have time tonight, but truly take yourselves and kind of survey David's life and put yourself in his shoes when he is sitting there in the crosshairs. Or Saul wants to kill him and he's throwing something at the wall. You know, these times through his life, and to say at that time in his life, what comes out of his mouth is, my trust is in the Lord. In chapter 16, verses, in the 16th Psalm, the concept is, and in this one, it's not as much that someone's attacking him, but he's just talking about his confidence in the Lord. But he says, I shall not be moved, right? Tree planted by the waters. My faith is in God. I shall not be moved. The 23rd Psalm, verse 4. Now, we probably all memorized the 23rd Psalm as young. We probably, if I was to say the first few words, we could probably go through together and recite it in unison. The Lord is my shepherd that I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me by the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And of things to fear in life, death is probably the one that just as humans, we fear the most, right? But even walking through the valley of the shadow of death, it said here, I will fear no evil. One, this is an amazing thing for someone to say. Two, isn't this an amazing goal for us to set for ourselves, to have such a faith and such confidence in God that we could say this? And not that we can say this while we're sitting here right now and our health is good and things are going great, but when the bottom falls out, that I could say this. Because this is the times that David would have said these things. And then, time and again, I picked chapter 62 and verse 6, but time and again, you have this, another theme that kind of runs through, He is my rock. He is my salvation. Right? As long as I have Him, He is my anchor. When we think of something being our rock, we could think about it being an anchor for a boat, but this is my rock. The wise man's going to build his house on a rock. Why is that? What is a rock? That's right. It is a firm, stable foundation. So again, when we start thinking about lessons on the Psalms of Confidence, if our confidence is in our money, what happens when the economy tanks? It's not a rock. It could shift. It could go. If our confidence is in, you know, our own abilities to defend ourselves, right? We have the right to bear arms in this country. If my confidence is in my ability to protect myself, then there might come a time that goes. The psalmist, time and time again, their confidence would be, he says his confidence was in the Lord. Now, one point that I meant to make at the beginning that I didn't, so let's make sure we make it here. Most of these psalms, for example, when we talk about the Psalms of Ascent, first, when were they, right? When were those, they would ritually sing these songs or chant these, what were they doing? That's right, that ascent up to Jerusalem, right? So they're going up, the songs of ascent. But the concept that they are songs mean that they would do what? These are things that they would sing, things that they would know. So when we start talking about these songs, If I was to just say, blessed be the tide that binds, what happens in your mind immediately? Most of these, you can immediately go through and tell me the rest of the lyrics of that song, right? Well, I seem to think that most of the Jews, I mean, these would have been the songs they sung in their worship time and again. So many of the Jews, as they was going through, especially when you get into teaching these kids about the Mosaic Psalms, these would have been Psalms that they would have known and sung and heard since they were very, very young. So these weren't been things that was new to them or things they've been reading for the first time. These would have been things that would have been common, that they would have been seeing for some time and would have known very well. So we've gone from that of confidence, right? My confidence will not be in anything on earth, but my confidence will be in the Lord. Another major theme or another type or another genre is Psalms that are of remembrance of who God is, what God has done for them. The first one we're going to look at is Psalm 78. We will spend a little bit of time here, so go ahead and turn your Bibles here. But as we think about it, in verses 5 through 7, as we go to get started, and sorry, we're on such a time schedule, I probably won't wait for everybody to get there. But in 5 through 7, and we start this out, what's the theme we see? Teach what? Teach these things to your children. Right? So, one of the things, the main purpose at the end of it is teach these things to your children so they will keep the commandments. That's not a shock to us from David, who has such a love for God and would have wanted all of the people to have it as well. Another major reason that they was to repeat them was so that they wouldn't do what? They wouldn't repeat what? Yeah, the mistakes their fathers had made. And some of the Psalms we're going to look at, this one included, is just a cataloged list of, here's the mistake they made. You know, I did this for them, then they did this. I did this for them, then they did this, right? And again, in all of this, it's to increase their faith. Now, does this concept and does it sound familiar to any passage? Does it bring a passage to mind? Teach these things to your children, bind them on the frontlets of their eyes, right? Deuteronomy 6, right? So you see this correlation between this, what David is wanting to do now, and what Moses, you know, what was said to be done years ago at the beginning of this the history. So in Psalms 78, starts off with this beautiful rendition, the first several verses, kind of accumulating in 13 through 16 of how God has blessed them. In just about every way possible, God could have blessed them. God blesses the children of Israel. He brings them out of the land, right? He brings them out of bondage. He saves them. He brings them across. They cross on dry land. He brings about the miracles that he's done for them that should have definitely built their faith up. In 17 through 22, we see that what was their, and we really don't have to have 17 through 22, what was their response to the blessings that God had done and the things God had done for them? They sinned. They tempted God. They rejected him. They complained. We're hungry, right? Well, and in the next section, even though they complained, we're starving. And what did God do when they said that we're hungry for, we're tired of this worthless bread? This amazing manna God had been giving them to keep them alive from heaven. We're tired of this worthless bread. Please give us something. We need something else to eat. Oh, I wish I was back in Egypt so that I could have the fish and the things that we had in Egypt. Well, they complained. What did God continue to do? You know, we had the giving of the quail. We had everything that they did. They would, you know, God would give the blessings. They would reject him. They would complain. They would argue and murmur. But yet, he would still bless them. And then you come down to 36 and 37. You see this concept that it goes through to the New Testament as well. Isn't it a pretty common theme? They'll flatter me with their mouths, right? They'll flatter me with their tongues. But what else are they doing with their mouths? James chapter 3. You know, they'll flatter me with their tongues. They're also lying. They're also deceitful with these same tongues. They're also rejecting me with these same tongues. So, he blessed them. They rejected him. He still continued to bless them even though, and they're this mixed up people, that would both flatter him with their tongues, but yet with that same tongue that they would speak flatteries and boast of him and praise him and sing psalms to him with those same song, with that same tongue. They would also curse him. The cycle repeats over. In the psalm, it repeats over and over. But you know what? Through history, what did it do? It repeated over and over. You know, this same cycle repeated over and over. So did God finally just, you know, throw his hands up and say, I'm done with these people? There's a lesson. To me, the psalm, there's a lesson here for us in the sense of, because in reality, we look kind of negatively and we kind of look down on the Jews and we look down on these Hebrew people that just couldn't learn. What if we was to back up and look at our own lives at the 50,000 foot view and watch our own cycles in life? What might we see? We might see some of the same kind of God showing us mercy, God showing us love. Yeah, we get bogged down in day-to-day life and we start rejecting, right? And what we see here is, to me, there is this lesson here. That even when we do this to God, does he continue to love? Yes. Does he continue to save? Yes. Are there conditions? Absolutely. You know, the New Testament tells us of those conditions. But there is still the passages like 2 John 1. If we confess our sins, he is faithful to forgive us. So this is there, and I think it's there for us. The cycle is there for us. There's other psalms, and once again, I picked out three. The first one is this. It shows this cycle of they would sin, God would bless them, they would sin or complain, God would continue to bless them, and the cycle would go over and over again. And then in Psalms 105, this is more of just a simple call to worship and reminding them of all the marvelous things that God has done. And they would do what? They would sing this, right? So just like we would sing songs to each other, they would be singing and chanting one to another of all of them. Miraculous and all the marvelous things that God had done for them. So time and again, how he took them out of the land of Egypt, how he parted the Red Sea, how he did these things for them, and they would sing of these. And you see how this would keep that thought in mind of teach these things to your children so that it's on the tip of their tongues, so that it's frontlets between their eyes. 106. We have in a minute, we're going to talk about how the cataloging of the blessings that God did for them. But in 106, we have just a catalog of the sins that they've committed. But what did God do? He blessed them anyway. What does that sound like? What is the word? that we use for that. Undeserved grace. Unmerited favor, right? That's what God gave to them, was this unmerited favor. And that's really, this psalm is about all of these things that God did. All the sins that they had committed. And then even with all of those sins, this unmerited favor, this mercy that God has shown to them. And again, I think it's kind of self-explanatory, but is there a lesson there? Whether it be some of the lessons we've done recently on judging, whatever it might happen to be, there is a lesson there that even the way they've done, God is still merciful. So what might the person who has been caught up in a sin, who might be saying to themselves or to someone who's trying to work with them, well, I've just been too evil. You know, God just can't forgive me. I've been too wicked. I think of the Corinthians when he said, you know, and such were some of you. But sometimes people get so bogged down in their own sins that they forget that God is bigger than that. He can forgive those. And this psalm kind of tells Israel that yes, here's all the things you've done wrong, all the sins that you committed, as much as God has blessed you, but yet he still shows mercy. In the 136th psalm, in the same category or this same type, is just a catalog of blessings that God has done for them through the years. And again, he's going to walk them through taking them out of the land of Egypt, removing them from that captivity. They were trapped. He takes them across the Red Sea. And I could be, and please forgive me, I've got a lot of the different psalms running through my head. So if I get what's in one of them mixed up with what's in a different one, forgive me, because that could easily happen. But these catalog of the blessings that he's done for them through the years, and what he has done for them, does that, you know, I looked over here and I forgot Coach Merle is teaching this quarter, but does that bring a song to mind that we sing a lot? Yeah, count your many blessings. And when they would be singing these blessings, what are they doing? They're doing the same thing that we're singing to each other to do, to count your many blessings. When they would sing these in their worship, or when they would sing these or chant these, whatever they may do with them, that's what they're doing, is they're singing, they're counting their blessings that God has done for them through history. So we've looked at the Psalms of praise, those of lament, those of thanksgiving, the confidence that we can have because the confidence the psalmist had in what God had done for him. Psalms of remembrance of who God was, both the cycle of the sin and the mercy, the sin and the blessing and the mercy shown, the cycle of counting, just reminding the people at every stage, just this cycle of reminding them of all that God has done, all they have done and all God has done, both good and bad. And then that of wisdom. Now, just first, it's the last one on my slide, but when I say Psalms of wisdom, what's the first ones that come to your mind? I don't know if I picked the same ones that you did or not. But what comes to your mind when you think Psalms of wisdom? What about 119? Why does Psalms 119 come to mind? What thoughts are repeated over and over through, you know, that longest psalm in the Bible? Oh, how I love what? Thy law. It is my meditation all the day and the night. That whole psalm is pretty much devoted to much he loves. Greg was talking about Sunday morning, that it literally goes through the alphabet. So every stanza, every section in that psalm is a different, that starts with a different letter of the alphabet, which is another type of psalm Hebrew poetry that could have happened. But there are several. Some of the ones, Psalms 1 is one that I think it comes to my mind anyway. I need to catch up with myself here. Give me just a second. Okay. Psalms, the first psalm. If someone would read at least the first three verses for me. Okay, so where this concept of wisdom, where, let's just go to the city of Athens in the New Testament. Who do people tend to seek out for wisdom, for knowledge? There's always been this concept of the smart thinkers of your age, right? You know, if we was to ask who that is now, there would be a different set of people that we would look to some great scientists or some great philosophers or whatever it might be. Go back to the time, the New Testament time, people would have looked to Athens because it was just filled with the writings of people like who? Aristotle. You know, you've got these great authors, and everybody would have been looking back to this. And it would have been the same here. But where is this wisdom coming from? Verse 2. This true wisdom. The law of the Lord. What's the results in verse 3? Planted like a tree, right? Be like a tree planted by the waters. Deep roots, steady. Going to bear a lot of fruit. But again, it's this concept of prospering, but all this, also this stuff. We can go back to confidence. We could have used this one for confidence. The confidence is in the Lord. The confidence that would come from being planted, being firmly, the firm foundation in the Word. Let me stop for just a minute and say questions, comments. I've asked questions, but I'm not giving you much of a time. That is an excellent point because we mentioned, you know, 2 John 1, but you're right. There is this concept of repentance and the turning back. They would fall away later, again, the cycle of judges. But, are you starting to say something else? Absolutely. That, you know, if you're reading through the Psalms, we're going to make the point about Psalm 69 is probably one of the most quoted Old Testament passages, right? And there's a catalog of things that where verses out of 69 is used and it's described and used to illustrate things in the New Testament through its pages. But the Psalms as a whole is quoted over and over and over through the New Testament. I mean, it's wisdom literature. Interesting point. Make sure I repeat this right, since I have the microphone. But if, between the shortest, 117, and the longest psalm and book of the Bible, you have Psalm 118 in the very center verse of 118, which is also the very center of the Bible. The point that's made there in verse 8 is that of put your confidence, put your trust, put your confidence in God, and He will take care of you. Excellent. Excellent. I normally teach a lot more about thoughts and comments and questions, but there's also, I also have another comment from time to time that says, bring your tennis shoes tonight because we're going to run. And that's kind of tonight's class is we've got a pace to keep. Psalms 19. I really put this up here. Again, it infiltrates everything. It infiltrates what we do and what we say today. When I say the law, verses 7 through 10, the law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord is right, rejoice in the rejoice in the heart. The commandments of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether, more to be desired than gold, yea, than much fine gold, sweeter also than honeycomb. I have to force myself not to break into the song as I read that, right? But that is definitely something that still infiltrates us today. And maybe if we were a much younger class, we might would have broken into the song there. But even as I read some of these, it's songs, you know, we have so many songs in our book that we still sing these. And this is one of the ones that we still sing to this day. But there's not much, you know, much more poetic and much more beautiful of a thought than what this law of the Lord does for us. It's perfect. It's clean. It's pure. It's right. All of these terrific qualities is associated with the law of the Lord. And then what about the listener? You know, just like we looked at before, what about the listener? What about the one who would adhere to this perfect law of the Lord? They're going to get the results of this, pure and righteous, altogether. And this, at the end of the day, this wisdom, this law of the Lord. What can I do to please God, right? And that's really what David is saying here. As he's looking into the law of the Lord, what can I do in my life to be pleasing to God? And there is nothing more to be desired than this, than gold. Yea, than much fine gold, as we end that verse off. So, again, this could go back to confidence, right? I want to have my confidence in my money, my possessions, my friends, who can help me, who can do what for me, or the food I have over my house, or the cars going down the road, or the brakes that's in my cars going down the road. Or I can have my confidence in God, because even if my life is taken, you're the one who can take the soul, not the one who can take the life. The 73rd Psalm, we look at it a lot, and it's a longer psalm, so again, trying to summarize it a bit, but there, this, again, in the wisdom section, it could fit into some other sections as well if we wanted to debate it, but there are some general questions that are asked. The first one is, why does the wicked prosper? That's a question. We've answered that question. Nobody has a problem with that question anymore today, right? Now, I think we still find ourselves looking at those that, in some cases, are just absolute sheer evil. Or we look at some of our politicians, or we look at some of these people that have risen to the top and they're driving million-dollar cars, they're living in the nice houses. It looks like everything is going for them, but yet we see that these are not righteous people. On top of that, these are pretty wicked people. Why do the wicked prosper while the righteous suffer? So that's not a new question. That question has been answered from times of old. But there's it's interesting that the way the point that the psalmist ends with here, I can tell you what I meant when I typed that, but I do apologize for that last point. I serve God yet suffer while they are at ease. But anyway. But at the end of this psalm, you have this concept of, though all of this is happening, though I can't understand, maybe even like Job says, I'm looking into this and I cannot understand this. At the end of the day, going back to confidence, I'm going to put my confidence on God. I'm going to serve God. Though I might suffer during this time, but I'm going to put my confidence in God, because at the end of time, what has God promised me? Right? You know, I am planting my feet on that promise. And again, it's confidence, it's trust, but I may not see it, I may not understand it right now, all of these things are happening, but I'm going to continue to do this because I'm going to put my confidence in God. I have trust. He's made a promise that He's going to bless me. He's going to take care of me. And though it may look like absolute despair, the enemies are all around and got me in the crossbow, I'm going to trust Him. Why? Because He's promised He would take care of me. That's all I have at this point, is that promise that He'll take care of me. And that theme is also throughout the Psalms. But why do people, you know, why did the righteous suffer while the wicked prosper? Well, you know, we could answer that a bit with, when you go to the New Testament, if your desires are for the things of this world, or you're doing the good deeds to be seen of man, to have the glory and the honor and all this of man, what might you should enjoy? You better enjoy those rewards. Why? That is your reward. That's the only reward you're going to get. So at the end of the day, that's really what this psalm is about. You know, if they're going to enjoy this wickedness, if they're going to have this wickedness, they may prosper. But they better enjoy that prospering, because time is going to come that's going to go away. We've already covered that. And again, we've already talked about Psalm 119. What comes to mind with Psalm 119? This same, the love of the Lord, right? So that theme repeats throughout all these Psalms, how much he loves the Lord, how much he loves his word. So, the last two sections, I think they really do kind of go together. I'm going to try to combine them. And one of the reasons I said that when I do this next quarter with high school class, I'm probably going to skip straight to 8. You can see tonight there's not enough time to really give a lot of justice to all 8 of these sections, right? So think about your age group. And obviously, if it's the really little ones, you're not going to talk about what is a psalm, right? What's Hebrew poetry about, right? By the time you're in high school, your high school students are studying that kind of forms of literature, and your college students definitely should be able to understand this. But those younger classes, you know, those are the kind of things that you can kind of move over. But go through these things, pick out 4 or 5 points, and make sure you go through these things and spend a whole class developing a point, especially in high school when they need their faith more than, faith is the key in that high school class where it's being challenged the most. There's 2 different kinds of kingship that's talked about in the Psalms. David first was what? He was their king. There are times that he talks about I, right? There's times the psalmist, whether it's David, whether it's Solomon, talks about himself and he's talking about I, and you learn things about the kingship. But for the most part, what's the other kind of kingship that's talked about in the Psalms? Who did God want them to see as their king from the very beginning? Him. Samuel, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting who? They're rejecting me, they're rejecting God. Why? God wanted to be their king, and they're asking for yet another king. So this concept of kingship is, you've got a physical king, but we're talking about the king, right? God as the ultimate king. No one sees this point better than David does. And if you read the Psalms, you will see that, and I think it is my first point. I might go to the, oh, it's not. Psalms 110. Well, we've already hit this where it's here, but Psalms 110, I'll start it, somebody finish it. David is there, and he speaks and says, "The Lord said to my Lord, sit here." Very good. "The Lord said to my Lord, sit here until your enemies are made a footstool." So what is being said there? What's David saying? Who are the lords that's being talked about here? Amorite, that is 110. Okay, thank you. I've got a lot of them going. What's the point? "The Lord said to my Lord." So here I've got David, and he's talking about, it's obviously 2 people, because this person, the Lord, said to his Lord, right? This is even quoted in the New Testament, so we don't even have to guess, right? But what is being said? Who is the first, the Lord? Yeah, the first one is God, and the second, my Lord, is Christ, right? Again, we're going to make this point in a minute. The psalmist writing things as if it was yesterday, though they're not happening for 1,000 years in the future. I wonder, how David as the psalmist had a grasp of what he had a grasp of and some of the prophetic things he said. But at the same time, we also have passages that tell us they desired the thing, they longed for these things they could look into and actually see and understand. So I think a lot of the prophets said things that they didn't understand. But this concept of kingship there, and obviously we need to hurry up and we'll get through these last 2 main points. But we have this, "The Lord said to my Lord." So you have these 2 kings that are going on through here. And let me actually hit this last one. And I used it, I remember now, I used it as a transition from the physical kings and him as king to this, to the messianic. you have these passages, and we won't go into it, but the messianic ones where you have these nations that rage and plot these things against Christ. And if you read them, you go, he's talking about Rome, right? You just see it. This is some point out in the future. You see the things that are being talked about. But what is the one who sits in heaven doing? He's laughing at these humans that are trying to plot out these vain things to try to destroy him. I have set my king in this same song, right? That positive language. One of the things you'll see with confidence is the language is always the action is I will set, right? I could or I might. It's that very firm. I will set mine. Psalms 22. Speaking of the future as if it was the past. Psalms 22 is much like Isaiah 53. Here's a man 1,000 years early that's speaking of something that's going to happen in the future as if it happened yesterday. And if you think about it, and as you're going through this, and I'm going to stop with this point, but with younger classes, it's an amazing thing to have someone looking and reading in Psalm 22, someone looking and reading in Isaiah 53, and someone looking and reading at the end of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, right? And let them see, here's something that's said a thousand years before. But they wrote it as history, as if it happened yesterday, and it's not to happen for some time in the future. Thank you for your time and your attention, and I'll let the people in the back.